It's time for Mac Break Weekly. It's official. The invitations are here. And who do you think got one? Was it Lori Gill? No. Was it Andy Iannacco? No. Was it Leo Laporte? No. It was Renee Ritchie. But we're all here to talk about what Apple might be announcing a week from Monday. We'll also talk about other Apple projects, like a new iPad, perhaps. Maybe Apple self-driving cars. And why that mean Elizabeth Warren wants to break up Apple. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 652, recorded Tuesday, March 12th, 2019. Ironic Sans. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by LastPass. Ensure safer workplace password sharing with LastPass, the number one most preferred password manager. Visit LastPass.com/twit to learn more. And by Capterra. Find the right tools to make an informed software decision for your business. Visit Capterra's free website at Capterra.com/MacBreak. And by WordPress. Turn your dreams into reality and launch your website at WordPress.com. Get 15% off any new plan at WordPress.com/MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show that features Tim Apple and the gang every week. The gang this week is Mr. Renee Ritchie from iMore.com and the Fabulous Vector Show. Hello.
Renee Vector, reporting for duty.
Renee Vector is here. Lori iMore is also here. Lori Gill, she's managing editor at iMore. Hello, Lori.
Hello.
And I guess that means we call you Andy WGBH.
No, if Tim is abandoning the title Chairman Honeycrisp as bestowed upon him by I'm now Chairman Honeycrisp. Thank you very much.
If you do go to Tim Cook's Twitter feed, he is now calling himself Tim Apple.
How great is that? Such a subtle troll.
Of course, I'm on a Windows machine, so he's really Tim Squarebox. But I guess he doesn't really care how it looks.
Those unspecified Unicode fonts, Leo.
Yeah, on Android or any of the other.
Actually, maybe it's like a double thing he's doing, like, against like the upcoming investigations. It's Tim redacted.
Oh, it's redacted Apple. Tim redacted Apple.
Lori or Micah Sargent, but they said like the Android and Windows should fill those characters so that it double trolls him. So he shows up as Tim Robot on Android and
I do want to point out that somebody is trolling Tim Apple on Twitter, because when I go to Tim's site on my deactivated Twitter account, it suggests I follow the president twice over here on the right. So clearly they are now tied at the hip.
And Hugh Jackman. That's odd.
And Hugh Jackman. I don't know why I'm supposed to follow. What does Tim Apple have to do with Hugh Jackman?
Maybe it's because they don't like Ryan Reynolds. I don't know.
Could be.
Did Tim also play Wolverine? I think like in the Or I know he voiced it in the Fox Channel cartoon.
This is snicked.
I think you're right. Now I'm really annoyed because every time I open Twitter on this machine, because there's a cookie here, it locks me back into my deactivated Twitter account. So you'll excuse me if I deactivate it one more time.
TW? What is it? TWWTR, the beta Twitter?
TWTTR. That's their old name, believe it or not. Yeah.
But it's a new beta.
Yeah, I would sign up for that. Just like after Mark Zuckerberg's blog post, I immediately reactivated my Facebook account. Right. I believed him. I thought, well, of course.
That was genius. No, but that was so genius because he took everything that people were complaining about and figured out a way to be even more anti-competitive and make more money by seemingly acquiescing to one high-level word that they used in their complaints.
Well, you know, you would have all people know this because you're an expert in Brazilian jiu-jitsu. And it was exactly what you do in jiu-jitsu, right? You
take
the opponent's enemy and use it against them. Energy.
It works. It works better if you imagine him saying it in a sarcastic voice. We understand that privacy is important.
You mean we can lock people out of our platform and make
good change to make sure we've earned your trust.
So I read it in a nice, honest Tim Cook style voice, and I reactivated my Facebook account. And then by the end of Twit last Sunday, I realized, Annie, that's exactly how Mike is saying it, and I deleted my account again.
It's like when he got caught last time and he said, oh, it was the developers. We're just not going to give developers any data anymore, but we're launching our own dating service. And now this is like, we're going to use encryption. We'll still have all the data, but no one else is going to see
it. We'll be private. We know that's what you want. Anyway, that's neither here nor there because we're here to talk about Apple, and it is now official, and I'm just wondering, show of hands, how many of you got invites to the March 25th event? I hate you, Renee. I hate you. Of course, Renee's going, and of course, I'm not going. Invite say? And it was like a video,
showtime.
Right?
It's show. Yeah, it was a 3-2-1 countdown, and then it's showtime. And the original one was on a pure black background, but if you go to Apple.com now and scroll down and click on the event page, it looks like it's the back of a MacBook or an iPad or something on space gray aluminum.
Oh, that's different than the invitation they sent out to everybody.
Yes.
Huh? Okay.
Yes.
Here it is. It's showtime.
Maybe yours is fake then.
Maybe it is.
Let me turn off my shield.
Maybe the Clips team sent it to me as a new filter, and I didn't realize.
It does look like a little titanium in the background there.
Or maybe to celebrate the relationship they're having with all these video creators, that's what happened like after Apple provided its notes on the first invite.
Steve Jobs from the Great said, you know,
a little too edgy. Yeah. It's a little too black and white. Can we have some shades of gray in there, please? Yeah.
Are we happy with the kerning?
Here's John Paczkowski's invitation.
Yeah,
4-3.
No different ones this time.
One, yeah. So, no surprise. It's showtime points to the fact, and I think everybody... Well, actually, it's interesting because Paczkowski kind of highlighted the headline to the news event as a news event, but really it's showtime implies we're going to see the new TV offering.
Yes. Yep. And he said no iPads, but everybody's expecting new iPads, Leo. I think you can't have an Apple event without people expecting hardware anymore. So it's going to be interesting to see how they manage those expectations.
Are they going to give us what we want and give us some hardware?
Toys.
Or are they going to say no?
Well, they might wait till June, till WWDC, and do all the hardware at once because we know there are also new laptops probably, right?
Yeah. Well, the only real new iPad we're really thinking about is an update to the 329 base model educational iPad, and that one
or
they
the
could
mini.
Probably yeah, or the mini.
But
that's true. The basic 329 one they could do with just a press release, but if they do a mini, you're right. Okay.
How long it's been since the mini?
Screen.
It's been 2 years. The mini, the last mini was announced this time of year, right? Early in the year. The last time the Mini 4, I remember
the Mini 4 was September, but the last the iPad nothing has been announced in April and March the last two years.
Yeah,
April was just a press release. March was the event.
Okay.
Yep. Remember, it is an educational thing, so that's where they'd stack that up at.
And the iPad Mini 4 is what, 2 years old now?
Three. It was September. Yeah, it was a September event. Oh, by the way, we have an iPad Mini 4. It was like it was like one quarter of a slide at the end of Phil's present.
You know how you know? Because it had an A8 chip in it. So it's easy to do the math. You just A12 minus 4. It was so it's 4 years old, right? Does it work that way?
Not really.
I don't know. I'm going to go before Congress and do the math, Leo.
sort of works that way. No, don't they do a new A every year?
Yes. This will be A13.
Not everything will get the new A. Anyway, I liked the iPad Mini. I wouldn't mind seeing a release. And I guess what you could say if you come out with an iPad Mini at this event in 2 weeks is, and here's a great way to read Apple News.
The most affordable way to read Apple News and watch Apple video.
Right. So
I don't know who I'm imitating there. I don't think any of them have that.
here's what we almost certainly know. Apple already has a news product. Oh, wait a minute. I got something from Tim.
Tim
Squarebox. Yeah. Look, I'm going to look inside. I'm very excited. This just arrived.
He was about to send it to you, and then he heard that. Tim
just arrived at our post office box. 3.
Oh.
2. 1. You are not going. Heart, Tim.
Oh. At least he loves you.
That was so great. Who came up with that?
Oh, my staff. They're always thinking. I mean, I could have had a big hand with a button, but no, I got this. So that's
you don't have as many lawyers, though, Leo.
I don't have nearly as many lawyers. So we know that there's Apple News. We know they bought Texture, which was a one-price magazine subscription. They were a big advertiser of ours, and we loved them. The idea was you get almost every magazine. There were a few missing, but a lot of the big magazines for one low monthly fee, which was, I'm trying to remember, was it around $10?
I still have my subscription. I think it's, but in Canada, it was one of those few things that were available in Canada as well, so I subscribed.
It was created by the magazine publishers themselves, Condé and Meredith, I think.
Rogers in Canada. Rogers.
So they had a deal. It was easy to get all the magazines. Those deals all went by the wayside when Apple bought them. Apple, we've already read in the Wall Street Journal, was having trouble convincing people to go for the proposed offer. The journal said it was 50-50. We take the subscription, we take half the money, and we don't give you information about the subscribers. But hey, at least you're getting something. And we discussed this at length. And I think
we don't alter the bargain further.
We came to the conclusion that while it's a great deal for a national magazine that might be struggling on a newsstand, where do you find a newsstand these days? And can use the national exposure. It's not such a good deal, as Andy pointed out, for like the Boston Globe or a paper that is local in nature, because that's just going to undercut them completely. I think for a national newspaper like the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, or the Washington Post, it might be, although all three of them have very successful digital efforts. Anyway, we'll find out. It's a week from Monday, the 25th.
The biggest thing I want to see is that, like, I talked about this earlier today on iMore, is that this just subscription fatigue. I was going through all my subscriptions, and there's just one after the other. I set up a Siri shortcut where I can say audit subscriptions now, and it goes to that page because I've forgotten half the stuff that I've subscribed to, and they're all like $10 a shot. And you don't think about it when you do the microtransaction, but it really adds up, and you start having a Netflix here and a Hulu there, and then Apple Music, and now Apple News, and Disney Plus, and all of these things, and suddenly it's like $100 or $200, and nobody's even trying to solve for that yet.
I'm also keen to see how they try to adapt a Netflix model, which is full of, hey, I had no idea this movie was available, or hey, I had no idea that this Korean soap opera even existed until it was recommended to me, or until I read about in the AV Club. How that adapts to something that you're supposed to have like a regular weekly or monthly relationship with, like a magazine. It's Marvel Comics Unlimited is really the only closest analog I can think of. And even there, it's more like they're presenting you with 10,000, 20,000 back issues rather than here is the latest issue of whatever on an all-you-can-eat basis.
And DC is doing that weird thing where it's all DC. Like, it's not all of Warner Brothers. There's no Harry Potter. And it's not just DC Comics, but it's DC Comics and movies and TV shows. And that's like, they're just all carving out these really weird spaces, and they all want $10.
Disney is opening their own channel. So if you want any Disney content, which means if you want any Marvel content that's not going to be on Hulu, it's going to probably be on this channel. Really, something's going to break in
comics.
A big, big way.
I got to pay for the comics separately from the movies, which is a death. But I do get the Star Wars stuff. There's just, like, as a consumer, it's so confusing.
But isn't this kind of this is what we asked for when we said we don't want to pay the high prices of cable, of owning cable. We want to be able to pick and choose what we want. So we're getting it now. So why are we complaining about how many subscriptions we have when this is literally what we wanted was to be able to pick and choose what we want.
We did want a la carte, didn't we?
The worst thing you can do is to say yes,
we wanted to bundle it, right?
Give people what they want.
Now we're telling these same companies that we said stop trying to sell us these huge bundles that we don't watch. Now we're telling them we want you to bundle it all into one so it's a lot easier for us to subscribe to it.
Or just give it to us free. I mean, that's what people are saying this morning. Like, I'm not going to pay for Apple subscriptions, but if they give it to me free with the device, I'll take it.
So that's the question. What are we going to get? And how is Apple going to package this? We've talked before about Apple Prime, where they give you one fee for everything. iCloud, movies, magazines, Apple Music,
Plus.
All together, you know. And that would be an interesting – I'd pay $100 a year for that. And notice that's not $10 a month.
That's less than you pay for Apple Music now, and it's like 800 times.
So how much would it be? $200 a year?
$15? No, I think it'd be like I think people are thinking, like, if it was Apple Prime, it'd be like $50 a month. It'd be like a ton of different stuff. Like if it was an iPhone subscription service as well.
I think that's a non-starter.
I guess it depends what it really includes.
What do you get?
Like, if it's Apple Music, Apple TV, Apple News, an iPhone upgrade program where you get a free phone, essentially, well, not a free, but you get a replacement phone every year, Apple Care Plus on that phone, iCloud storage. I mean, they'll have to build one of those graphs where Steve's like, yes, you know, people buy a phone now and they buy an iPod because we sell it to them and they pay $450 for this. And we're not going to charge you a penny more than that.
Yeah, it's really hard to guess, isn't it? Because I can't, I was, as it happens, this I spent part of this morning editing a collaborative document in Pages. And after I had finished what I needed to do and went back to my meditation, it was a slick enough and eventful and eventless enough procedure that once again, I'm thinking that when Apple does decide to pivot fully towards services and bank their future on their ability to make everything that they do work as well as collaborative editing on Pages, that's going to be hysterically funny to watch. That's going to be an amusing 3 or 4 years because I was handed a link and okay, great. So I click on this link and it tries to open it in the web browser as opposed to in Pages in the desktop app. And then it wouldn't actually open it until I signed into iCloud. And I signed into iCloud, and now I have to verify that I am the person who is trying to open this document. And in the meantime, it had signed me out of iCloud. And it was like, oh, okay. So their ability to give me iCloud services plus Apple Music plus streaming video plus, they're going to have to elevate their game if they're going to have to demonstrate that this is going to be worth $10 or $15 a month.
It's interesting that the invitation really focused on the show, not the news. So Does that imply maybe it's all going to be bundled or is just it's going to be well, first we're going to show you.
Or is news time a worse catchphrase?
Yeah, or, that's true.
Or is the news products still up in the air enough? They don't have I easily imagine that just as they weren't going to schedule this video announcement until they knew that they would get Bryan Singer up on the stage, they would get Oprah on the stage, they would get surviving Beatles on the stage. They're not going to do the news product until they've got the deals with 3 or 4 specific people that they're after absolutely locked down. So maybe it's that either it's just not ready yet or they're still actually just writing all these contracts to make sure that they can say, and look who, and we've got Oprah Magazine, and look, we've got, I'm actually starting to blank thinking about actual newsstand magazines that are still in publication.
You know who I'd put on the stage if I were them a week from Monday? Brie Larson.
Who's that?
She's just signed a deal to star in and produce a drama at Apple. Yeah. She's the star of the new Captain Marvel movie and probably the hottest actor in Hollywood this week anyway.
Until Endgame comes out next month.
Yeah, right. Well, you know how it is. You got to take it when you get it. But this is yet another big name, really big name Apple has signed. I mean, it's kind of amazing.
Is it weird that their budget is a weird strategy because they're spending way less on content than Amazon or Netflix are, but what they are spending on is really big names. They're not going to have anywhere near the quantity of programming, and it remains to be seen the quality that they get, but the names that they've gotten are spectacular.
Well,
so
and the
far.
Names, don't the names drive people to subscribe? I mean, look, you have to have a tentpole like Game of Thrones.
But they have one, and then they have like, and then after that episode is finished, you can go watch endless catalog content. If like the Jennifer Aniston show is finished, what do you watch? Yeah.
Well, that's going to be. I mean, that'll be interesting. Why don't? Yeah. I mean, what they may do is what HBO does. Although HBO, by the way, now that they're owned by Time Warner, not Time Warner. Now that Time Warner is owned, I can't keep track of it. Who owns Time Warner now? I think anyway, the
Coke and Pepsi own everything.
I think that they're being pushed to move more like to a Netflix model where you just crank out stuff as fast as you can. But what HBO always did, which was brilliant, was they would have these big debuts, and then when that show ended, they'd have another one. And so they had a tent pole that was almost yearly, that all the year round they'd have tent poles as they were able to create more content. Maybe Apple is going to do that.
I like the idea that they will have their sort of tent pole shows like you're talking about, where every season there's something big that's going to come out next, which will keep you subscribing.
Exactly.
But that we also can have you know, some maybe smaller version, not everything of iTunes movies and TV. So we can go watch a movie that you might normally have to buy or rent, or we could go watch a TV show that you might normally have to get the whole season or buy episodes individually. So if they're all kind of packaged together, then you watch all of your iTunes movie and TV content. And then when the special TV shows comes out, just like you're saying, you have a reason to keep subscribing every season because there's something new coming out, and maybe they overlap a little so that you can, oh, now there's a new show that we're watching. So we got to keep our subscription.
So far, according to Variety, it's reported that Apple's forthcoming product, and again, we should stress this is all speculation. Apple isn't saying. Yeah. We'll know in a couple of weeks. Will offer access to both original content and other SVOD services. So you might video have Stars. You might have, who knows, HBO. You might have other stuff.
But the language they like use, the every time they use it.
Yeah, like Amazon. Yeah.
Go ahead, Lori.
It's like the Amazon model where within the app itself, you can subscribe through Apple to get these other programs. So, you know, Hulu, HBO, Stars, Shudder TV, all of those could go through Apple to get you into your subscription. And it's all kind of packaged in one place.
Yeah, so that's a
Which you already get on Apple TV. It's just, if this is true, it's within an app or a program that's Apple TV.
Yeah, big deal. It's Apple TV. Yeah. In fact, according to Variety, they think that the Apple shows will be free, that they'll come with an Apple device, you know, because you'll have TV on it. Free Apple shows could, this is the thinking, free Apple shows could reach hundreds of millions of consumers in the U.S. alone. That would explain how they're getting these big names. Free accessibility can let Apple reach consumers other streaming services don't necessarily reach, including people with cable subscriptions right now, right? That aren't, you know, I mean, I bet you there are people right now who have spent $200 on cable that don't bother spending money on Netflix because they have more content than they can eat anyway. Free accessibility can let Apple upsell customers to these paid SVOD services. So down the line, Apple could roll out a paid tier. This is, again, speculation from Variety. On its streaming service, separate from the core original shows it initially made available for free. This wouldn't be completely out of left field from Apple either. Apple's looking for franchises that could eventually serve as hooks to lure subscribers to a Netflix-like subscription service, according to CNBC. I'm reading it from Variety because Variety is the Hollywood kind of newspaper, and it's my best guess that they are well-informed about Apple's plans by everybody in Hollywood who's been talking to Apple.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't have Apple's traditional secrecy.
Right. go ahead.
It is weird, but it's just thinking that Amazon service and Netflix service and Hulu service, they all have these wonderful original content that they pay for that have huge audiences and also critical acclaim and occasionally Oscar nominations, but they also have the safety net behind them that they also have this catalog of TV shows and movies that they already have that you're going to get no matter what. HBO has the same sort of thing where whether or not whatever new series they're going to do after Game of Thrones pays off or not, they will always have the ability to show you the movies that you missed 3 months ago and are not worth paying $5 to rent online. It's going to be interesting to see how Apple packages this. If they have wonderful original content with people that you names and creators that you recognize, but if you're just not interested in Brie Larson's reality pranks show, and then I'm not going to watch. We watch that for 2 minutes, then you turn it off and you look for something else. But there isn't 10 seasons of Bob's Burgers waiting for you when you ditch out of that.
Yeah.
What happens then?
Yeah.
It's. I'm not saying I know what Apple should be doing or this is going to fail. It's just that it's fun to have this thing where I honestly don't know. Apple clearly has a plan. Apple knows how they're going to be successful with this. I just don't see what the obvious path is for them launching a service that will be important immediately.
I'm the same way. Like, I know what I want as a consumer. I'm really, Apple before has shown me things that I didn't know I wanted and ended up wanting them. But I know what I want as a consumer, and either they have to give it to me or they have to show me why what they're offering is better than what I expected. Yeah. Have to do one of those
don't you remember when all these rumors were starting? During Steve Jobs' last days, there were a lot of stories were coming out about how things were winding down and how cryptic things he would say that people didn't. Whoever heard this didn't know what the full story was. Like a cable company said, we finally found a way we can crack cable TV or we can crack television. And maybe this is still an offshoot of whatever the original idea was at Apple 5 or 6 or 7 years ago. Yeah. Or whether it was that was cracked for a reason. We decided to put it up on the shelf and build a new one of those. But it's just a lot of reasons to wonder exactly what's going to be going on.
Well, we hope we'll see a lot of teasers, clips, and celebrities. And it's going to be Renee Ritchie, our correspondent on the red carpet, a week from Monday, 10 a.m.
Is it? Oh, God.
Tim, what are you wearing? Is that Vera Wang?
Apple did maybe tease something about the new news feature when they released 10.14.4. It's out in beta now. And there is apparently a hook for something to do with magazine subscriptions. Once again, Stephen Troughton Smith has come up with screenshots. Well, here's one, a little dialogue that says, new issues available, National Geographic, Bon Appetit, and Fast Company.
Let's talk about the new icon, though. I mean, next to Slack, it's the most confusing thing for me to try to find.
I like it.
It's fine. I just don't recognize it. I'm hunting my screen trying to find what it is.
That's because you
need to put it in your widget and not worry about finding the app.
Stick it in your widget. So
you don't understand what it's like to live in Canada where the news and the widget not always seems to parallel. It's like they love to give us widget news, which is drunk guy rides moose and maple syrup spill.
But and you can still tap into the news app when you do that.
That's true. All right.
But I do agree with you. It's like, it's just a letter N. It's a stylized letter N that does nothing to reference or hook into what this app actually does. It's not like the FedEx logo where, oh, wow, look, there's actually an arrow embedded in the logo or any of these other wonderful app icons where there's a definite cognitive relevance. This could be like the new Netscape logo or Nescafe or anything.
Where's Louis Mantia when you need him?
The notifications have a URL scheme that's https://apple.news. And as you can see, there's quite a few things on apple.news.
Mm-hmm. Following for you in history and saved. Those are all part of the current news app. But those magazine related ones are definitely
magazines, my magazines, subscription. And subscription.
That's new.
Yeah. Not subscriptions, plural.
Just singular.
Boy, now we're really spending a lot of energy reading into that.
That's what makes this fun.
That's true. Yeah.
If it's subscription singular, that could be here's a link to an actual magazine that is available for a subscription, as opposed to the ones you've already got.
Or it could be a link to your subscription to Apple News.
Yeah,
which will include all of those. Other things that you love to. I love the idea of being able to access all the different news organizations that I love reading the articles for, but I can't afford to have a subscription to each one of them. And therefore, I hit my 5-article max, halfway through the week or something like that. Like, I would love to be able to have access to them all the time instead of just a handful of them that, I love them all. I just can't afford them all.
Yeah, I wonder what the economics though is of that. No, the recurring complaint that every single music publisher has about streaming services is that yes, you get ears, but you don't get money. They much rather go back to those wonderful days where they could charge $18 for a CD, even if it only has like 2 songs they actually want, but they got to buy the 7 others of them. Given that a subscription to an online subscription to like a major online publication will cost like $5 a month or $10 a month, if a news app that comes preloaded onto every single Apple device brings some new eyes, how is that going to bring this magazine more money? And maybe I can be supporting this publication better by actually just going through the web, which is the way that I normally aggregate like brand new articles and stuff like that, and give them the full amount without having to give them even a one penny to Apple.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great thing to think about and consider, because we want to support these organizations that have brought us so much great information and media in the past. But the truth is that that's not the way the world works anymore. Yeah, we used to buy newspapers that were delivered to our door every day, and we went to the store and we bought the magazines that we love, or we had a subscription and the paper magazine came to us. But that's literally not the way the world works anymore. And these organizations have to find other ways to do it. And I think that if the New York Times previously could reach a wide audience around the U.S., and then they couldn't reach anybody else because nobody else was going to subscribe to this. And then here's Apple News coming along and saying, there's, you know, 5 million more people that could start subscribing to you, but it's only a portion of what you were normally getting. Well, New York Times was already losing readership anyway because the way the world is turning. So no, it's not what they could have got 15 or 20 years ago, but it's something that they literally couldn't have gotten at all if not for a service like this happening.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Let's see here. I guess that's all we have can say possibly about the 25th. It's just around the corner. We will find out. We will know more. And Renee will be there, and then we'll do a live stream, as always, 10 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time, Monday, March 25th. And Renee, you think they'll probably announce other hardware in June, I would think, right?
It could be. Some of the stuff could be like they did in previous years. They've done everything from just announced the new update for the iPad in a press release. I think they did briefings for the red. They usually have a red iPhone variant in the spring. So there could be a bunch of stuff that just comes out that's not at the event. Or there could be some stuff they want to show off there. Right. And then for WWC, it's gone both ways. Last year, there was no new hardware. The year before that, there was so much new hardware that Lori Gill and I were literally carrying two iMacs and a MacBook Pro out of the venue, up the hotel with a 24-hour embargo to get the reviews done. You know which one I prefer is the less hardware from a reviewer standpoint, but from a consumer standpoint, give me all the hardware.
Yeah.
I think it'd be great if they had an update to Apple TV. I don't know what that would be because the current model Apple TV is great, but if they were announcing something that was all about watching TV and watching movies through some new service, a new Apple TV to go along with it sounds like a great idea.
And of course, according to rumor, 9to5 Mac, the new iPad will have a Touch ID fingerprint reader and headphones. It won't be a big redesign. So maybe that is the kind of thing you release in a memo, right?
Yeah.
Release, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, if they were to delete Touch ID, that means that they're changing to a new bezels, new case design.
It's a big
same thing, exactly. So that's this way they can keep the tooling they have for the existing product, then just upgrade the processor.
Let's take a break. More to come. Renee Ritchie, Lori Gill from iMore, and Andy Iannocco from Boston Public Radio. Our show today brought to you by LastPass. I tell you what, I am without LastPass. I'm out of luck. But fortunately, I have LastPass everywhere. That's really the beauty of LastPass, whether it's Mac, Windows, even Linux, any browser that you use, and of course iOS and Android, you always have LastPass there to generate long, strong, random passwords. Passwords that are, yes, unmemorable. Store them safely away. Keep them there. Let you know when you try to reuse a password that you've used somewhere else. Keep you from doing that, discourage you from doing that, and a lot more. LastPass is the best way. I wish we didn't have to have passwords, but since we do, you got to have LastPass. And especially if you're a business, because your employees, you know, if you listen to this show, you know how to good password management and how to keep track and all of that stuff. You don't need to be told, I hope. You're not reusing passwords. You're not using your niece's birth date and dog's first name to log into sites anymore. But your employees are. They're doing worse. They're putting passwords on Post-it notes on their monitors and more. Just because it's hard to remember. So if you've got a business, you got to have LastPass Enterprise. If your team's close-knit, you know, employees cover each other's vacations and sick days. They're probably also sharing passwords hidden in drawers under mouse pads, visible on monitors. In fact, we know more than half of all employees share passwords, and not just with other employees. Protect yourself and your business with LastPass, the number one most preferred password manager, trusted by over 43,000 businesses. I know you know LastPass is available for individuals, but I do want to make everyone aware of the fact that you can use it in your business. We do. We have for several years, and it's great. It makes it convenient for employees while keeping access to corporate data secure. You have complete centralized admin oversight. You set master password requirements. We, for instance, make sure we say you have to use two-factor. We encourage people to use YubiKeys. LastPass works with every two-factor device known to man, including LastPass's own authenticator device, which is really sweet because it does, instead of six digits, it just says approve, deny. It pops up a little push notification on your phone. I love that. You can have over 100 policies. You'll get actionable security reports. You can create shared folders. We use that heavily. Each department has its own shared folder. And you can even share passwords with people and not give them the password. Just say, look, log into our bank account this way. Click this link. LastPass fills it in but never shows them the password. That's really, for me, the single best reason to use LastPass in business. Your employees don't know your passwords. They don't need to. We trust LastPass so much we put everything in there. Database logins, SSH keys, software licenses, all our business information. I use LastPass for my passport. Every time I travel, I know I have a copy of my passport available on all my devices quickly and easily, but totally secure. That's awesome. My driver's license is in there. I even store social security numbers for my whole family in LastPass. LastPass is built on a zero-knowledge security model. Data is encrypted and decrypted only at the device level. That means LastPass does not have access to it. Only you have access to your passwords. And when you use LastPass Enterprise, every employee has their own secure vault for managing and accessing passwords. So there's really no reason not to use LastPass, and there are a million reasons to use it. Please, when you're using passwords in business, and I know you are, please do me a favor and use LastPass. If you use Microsoft Active Directory, you can even use that as your main login, which makes it even easier. There's LastPass for individuals. They call it LastPass Premium. LastPass for families. That's what I use at home. Makes it really easy to share passwords with my wife. She has emergency access if something should happen to me. There's LastPass Teams for small teams of 50 or fewer. And then, of course, LastPass Enterprise, which is what we use. 13.5 million people use LastPass. It's the first program I put on every new device. I just set up a Galaxy S10 Plus. It was so much easier thanks to LastPass. The best password solution for your team is at LastPass.com/twit. LastPass.com/twit. I'm not going to talk about the Galaxy S10 Plus because this is the Matt Apple show. But I do.
You can do it. It's pretty.
It's pretty.
You're just wishing.
Well, you know, Samsung makes really nice hardware. And it's clear when you compare it to the iPhone XS screen that they're keeping the best Super AMOLED screens for themselves.
I mean, it's also 6 months later, and that technology moves
okay,
real fast.
Yeah, that's true. But always the best OLED screen out there is always on Samsung's.
Like, there's two things you can count on, Lee. When a new phone comes out, DisplayMate's going to say it's the best, and DxOMark is going to say the camera's
best. The camera. I'm not sure it's the best camera. In fact, I would say that the iPhone camera is probably better in some ways with, for instance, color accuracy. And the night sight on the Google Pixel is better for a low light. But there is something that this Samsung does I really like. It's got three lenses, kind of like Apple, but one better, right?
That's the only thing LG had going for it, too. Now Samsung's got it.
Let me see if I can find a good example. Here's a good example. We were in San Francisco shooting pictures. That's the kind of the closest in lens. I guess in Apple parlance, call that telephoto. This is the standard medium range lens. And then this is the wide angle. And
it's so great.
It's so wide that you actually get barrel distortion, but that's kind of a fun effect.
It's actually a neat look.
And I didn't move.
It's like almost fisheye. It's like they went to fisheye and then took it 1 degree back.
Yeah, I think it's 18 millimeter is my guess. This is the same thing. This is the standard. I'm standing about 6 feet from a motorcycle. This is, I didn't move, same shot, different lens.
I want that so badly, Leo. And there's rumors we're going to get it on the next iPhone, but I kind of want it now.
A super wide is such an important thing because there's a point where you can't move any further back.
Right.
And so you have to, there's so many times where I've had to take a panorama of something because I just can't get back far enough.
Sneakers so has failed us.
Bring it on. Yeah.
Here's the Contemporary Jewish Museum in San Francisco. I'm standing right under it. There's no way you could get this architectural shot.
It's so great. And if you imagine like the interface we have now where you press that button and you just zoom in to 2X, if you could press another button and zoom
exactly.
out. I don't know what they'd call it, minus 2X.
But
whatever. It would just be so great.
The distortion. I mean, this person in the shot is actually bent because of the curvature in the lens. So
I mean, there's probably physics. Like, no offense to Samsung, but the camera software people at both Google and Apple are factorially better.
Yeah.
And there's probably a lot of AI they could use to they already do that already to minimize distortion.
Yeah. Here's a picture I took of Megan, wide angle, medium, tight. You got to be careful with the wide angle though, because
you get
too close. And
she's gonna hate you for that.
People, yeah, she's not gonna hate me for taking it. She's gonna hate me for showing it.
Yeah,
but a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B.
Yeah. So screen's great. Camera, I think the camera images are pretty high quality. I do think the iPhone and Pixel probably beat it in certain regards.
After I watched his review of the Galaxy S10, YouTube suggested Marquez's review of the Galaxy S5. And just looking back with
we've come a long way.
Removable back.
Yeah.
Also, just amazing how they've gotten their hardware game together.
Demos is telling me that the wide is 13 millimeters. So that's really, fisheye's like 8. So that's really close. This is a ceramic back. I got the kind of the premium one.
Ooh.
And I wish Apple would use ceramic. I really like ceramic. I have to say.
It's such a classy look. It's such a classy feel. Yeah. When you put color into ceramic, it's a depth of color that you just can't get with anything else.
It's slippery as hell though.
Yeah.
I ordered a case, but because it's a new phone, the case isn't coming till tomorrow, and I am just
But you want to see it at least for the first few days. Yeah. You want to see what you paid for.
But boy, am I careful. Paid for is right, because this is the top of the line with ceramic back, a terabyte internal storage. Which is funny because I usually, you can still put an SD card. And by habit, I had the camera saving pictures to SD. And then I realized, I shouldn't be doing that. I have a terabyte internal storage. Let's try to fill it anyway.
Fill it though, Leo. I mean, it sounds like a lot, but you always find a way to fill it.
I don't know. That's an awful lot. And then it's got 12 gigs of RAM, which is an awful lot of RAM.
Yes.
I don't know if it needs that much RAM. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Laura.
You need a lot of RAM for the terabyte.
It might be. I don't know.
That's a computer.
It's a computer.
So many more ways than a phone has ever been a computer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, Samsung and Apple both have their own perspectives and identities on how they build their phones. Apple's is always, we have the latest, not only the latest technology, but the technology works, as opposed to Samsung, which is we got there first and it makes for a great press release, but it doesn't actually really function. But Samsung's tack is always, there are some people that feel or actually do need the most powerful device you can actually hold in your hand and stick in a pocket. So powerful that you can actually connect a keyboard and a screen to it and really use it almost like a desktop computer. And that's exactly what the Samsung top of the line Galaxy is always about.
I do have one recommendation, though, and that is that nobody should use the facial, like turn off the facial thing. I was watching Lewis use his own YouTube videos to unlock the phone.
Yeah.
The thing. So just leave that off.
In fact,
fingerprint, you're
fine. I turned it off because it was so quickly recognizing anything that looked roughly like me that it was just not locked.
Put your hand up there and just like move your lips like that and it'll actually unlock.
You remember that Apple was considering the in-screen fingerprint reader for the iPhone X and decided not to do it. Samsung's bundling in ultrasonic. Thank you. Not an optical, but an ultrasonic reader under the screen. And unfortunately, I have it set up so that it unlocks when I'm at work. So I should, how can I lock it? I'll have to figure out a way to lock the thing. But it's not great. On the other hand, there it is. I locked it. So you see the fingerprint image on the screen. And you have to hold it there
for
a second.
Animation.
No, and it didn't match.
I like that animation. That's real pretty.
It's pretty.
Yeah.
But it's not perfect. And that's kind of a problem. It's a little slower. That? I did get used to it. And so I think that's part of it. I had to get used
to the Qualcomm or the Synaptic ultrasonic.
I don't know
who
they're using.
I forgot to check.
So
it might be Qualcomm.
You know, you could see it's a little slower than fingerprint anywhere else.
Yeah, see,
it's a little more finicky.
That's what I'm talking about.
The 10E is so fast.
But you know what? I don't mind. You just get used to it. You get used to it, and you live with it. And I think it's fairly secure. And
It'll probably speed up over time too. The way iPhone worked with Touch ID and Face ID, it started out kind of slow, and even just software updates helped increase the speed on that.
Yeah, and maybe training too, spending more time using it.
It's getting to know your fingers.
I guess my yes, it's not as fast as Apple's Touch ID was. It's a little finicky because there's no way to know. You just have to look for where to touch it, although I guess you get used to that part. But it's fine. You know, I'm kind of comfortable with it now. And so it's usable. It's not perfect. There's better, but it's usable.
Again, that's something that you really have to appreciate about our iPhones and our iPads, that Touch ID works straight away. And I remember there being more lag inside my head than there was actually inside the CPU. Face ID, the same thing, where I've had to learn I don't have to actually pose for the Face ID to unlock it. Literally, it was like, because as soon as I'm looking at the screen, it's waiting for me to simply swipe up to unroll the screen. It's that wonderful thing that gives you faith in it and in the long term. So when it does improve, you're still totally on board. Again, that's a weakness with Samsung compared to Apple. They will come out with these things that are kind of working, but not quite what they should be. And also with Samsung is you don't know if they're committed to continuing to evolve this thing. Remember that face recognition, face unlock is not something they just unrolled this year. This is something that they were made fun of a year or two ago when it first came out in the first, I think it was the S9? But anyway, a year or two ago.
The Iris, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And it should not, when they have their flagship phone, you should not still be able to defeat it with the very first trick that would occur to you on how to defeat Face ID. Yeah. So that's what's frustrating about Samsung. A lot of superlatives that they rightly earn, but one of the things that they are always going to be knocked for in my eye is that they'll come out with a feature and it seems like more of a PR feature than a commitment to actually evolve this technology to make the phone better.
I'd put it maybe a little bit differently. I think because they still also have the antiquated Android pattern swiping to unlock it. I think that they just give you a variety. This is very location. Samsung. They give you a ton of different ways to do anything. And you get to pick. And if you want one also that's more secure, you can use one that's more secure.
Also, like there's a big a lot of people love the S10e because the fingerprint sensor is in the side and it's super super fast.
Yeah.
But then you can't use it as easily when it's lying on a table because you got to like get to that finger. Everything is a compromise. Right. But I think what's hard for people here is that they had the Iris scan, which was a secure version, albeit it had its own limitations, and that's gone away.
Yeah, I don't know why they took that out. I guess they didn't, because of the notch, they didn't have enough. Version. They don't have the camera.
They could have done three. They could have done three holes. Once you got two, go for the spider.
The notch does not bother me. It's basically where the notifications are. It just means the notifications slid over. People just complain so much about notch and hole punch. Great. And but well, even so I mean, good. But even if I open like the calendar app where you can see the notch, it's not a big deal. I don't think the Bixby button can be remapped now. I remapped it to Hangouts so I could put my text messages pop up much faster. That's nice. What you can't Google remap Assistant. It to Google Assistant, which would be nice. But I have to say, Bixby is, you know, I can double tap to get Bixby, and Bixby has gotten much better. And is much more useful, including routines that are very much like Apple's shortcuts. So I have routines. For instance, this phone is now in the work routine. That's why it's unlocked. And it puts Do Not Disturb on. So very much like Apple's shortcuts, it can have location-based routines. It can have voice-triggered routines. So they've definitely kind of noticed what Apple's doing with shortcuts and duplicating to some degree.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, I know that Apple believes that clicky buttons and anything that mars the purity of an unbroken surface is anathema. But if they gave us one button that was easy to get to physically on the edge of the device that we could just simply map to any shortcut we want
it's
one of those things that would do so much to make your phone your phone.
Yeah.
Because it's great that a double tap the power button has become an almost universal action on every phone to launch the camera app. But there's a lot of people for whom their to-do list is their camera app. It's like the thing that they're probably picking up the phone to do, and to be able to give first priority, first level of access to that. Boy, that would be a great thing.
That's not a bad idea. Maybe I'll map it to the camera. I come to think of it, that might be better. The other thing I do. really like about Android in general, and I think Samsung does this very well, it's the ultimately customizable. So I've really made this phone my own in a way I just can't do with the iPhone. Partly that's widgets. So I have a lot. I use widgets an awful lot. So I have a lot of widgets, a calendar widget, and you know, all sorts of different stuff on here that makes it very easy for me to see at a glance what's going on. I am using a different launcher too. Apple, you're stuck with Springboard, but with Android, there are a variety of launchers. I don't like the Samsung launcher, but that's not a problem. I can have a launcher. This has all my music on here. This has all my apps on this side. I can customize it. Android, Samsung still has that Edge menu, which I find actually useful in, if I, in a constrained way, if I use it in a certain way. And I really love this. I only have two rows of icons, but the action launcher that I use allows me to either tap the icon to run that program or swipe down and open it. It's actually a hidden folder that contains the apps in that category. So it's a very, I can get to every app very quickly and easily right from the front of the screen. That kind of customization I wish Apple would put in.
I don't know if Lori remembers this, but we hired a new Hi2 writer 2 years ago, and she turned in all these articles, and she had a Samsung phone, and every one of the screenshots had a lined paper background with Comic Sans as the typeface. So you have to use that power responsibly.
You can do it. That's the point.
Yes. But with great power, with great customization.
Responsibility? I understand.
No, there's been rumors for a while that Apple was doing that big redesign, and one of the reasons why we didn't get dark mode was because they were working on a larger theme kit, and I don't know if that'll be ready for iOS 13.
Well, we're thinking
ever go as far as what Android does, but they're like, iOS is on version 12 and there's no font management. Like, Adobe's going to have to do their own cloud-based fonts because there's no concept of font management, among other things, on iOS. And those are problems that, as the system grows up, are just not tenable. So hopefully we will get like that theme kit and that font kit,
Samsung,
and have a little bit of the fun.
Long offered not only a font manager, but a variety of fonts. I actually don't use the standard font. I like the fonts.
Like marker felt, not Comic Sans.
Yeah.
Like, at least, like, but
you,
you
can,
know,
though, if you wanted Comic Sans. And then,
just don't understand irony.
She just said, I wonder what they'll
ironic
do.
Songs?
Ironic songs.
But that's another, again, this is an Apple show, so I keep coming back to, like, these are signature differences between Apple and Android and Samsung, which is kind of its own brand almost. That I love it. I love my Android phone because, like you said, I can change whatever it is that bugs me about it. I can probably change it. But Apple's stance has always been most people want it to work. They're not fixated on making sure it gets to be 99% exactly how they want it to work. If the manufacturer can get it to 85 to 90%, but if that's how it works out of the box and there's no way to screw it up, that's a feature for, I think the majority of the people out there. Again, I value Android for customizability, but I wonder how many people are even aware that you can add widgets to a home screen or that you can install an alternative launcher. Believe me, the magic when people ask me, oh wow, I'm surprised you use an Android phone, why do you use it, and I show them a couple of the features, they're like, oh my god, I never know that. That's great. Well, what kind of phone do you have? Well, I have an HTC. Well, okay, well, you can get this launcher that does the exact same thing in your.
So we actually live that drama every day in my house because you know, I'll show Lisa this and she'll say, oh, that's really great. I'd love that. But I don't want to, I am not a person who wants to spend 1 second customizing my phone, she says.
I know.
And she's very happy. In fact, I am very happy with the iPhone until I go to something like this and this is 5 days worth of tweaking, digging within the menus. You can tweak a Samsung forever. And I spent very little time tweaking my iPhone. But now when I go back to it, I go, oh, it can't do that.
That's exactly what we're talking about, is this argument that we should stop saying things like iOS is bad because X and Android is bad because Y.
Right.
It's like they're meant for different types
of
personalities. And, and we should embrace those instead of saying my phone's better than yours or my operating system is better than yours because it does it different. And I love the Android operating system, but I use an iPhone. That's my main driver. And I love the Android operating system exactly for what you're talking about, which is that you can have more customized stuff. And they also do a beautiful user interface while giving you more access to your customizations. But I don't do that. I don't spend 5 days customizing my software. So right. iPhone is the thing that gives me what I want.
Yep.
Yeah. You're totally too, right.
Like, I was all in on
just the presence of Apple and the iPhone drives Android to become better and the hardware to become better. Yeah. The presence of Android and Android hardware drives Apple to make the iPhone better. It's great for consumers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just going to say that I was all in, like previously, before the iPhone was introduced, I was all in on, I had Windows, I had Xbox, I had both Windows, mobile, and Palm phones, and I would spend hours tweaking everything. Like, I would make when they announced the iPhone, I made my Trio look like an iPhone because I couldn't get an iPhone yet, and you could do that, and then when I was at work, and I got a new machine, and it was Windows Vista, and the machine from Dell shipped with a graphics card that had no driver on the machine, so it just wouldn't boot, and the IT guy who was running Linux at the time said, look, we're just getting you a Mac because like you say you enjoy doing this, but you're nothing but angry all the time. And I think if you weren't physically able to do it, you would just shut up and work and that'd be better for all of us.
That's true. That's a good point. There's
maybe
some,
reason why some you love like Apple tweet. Is that it doesn't judge you. It doesn't point out the flaws in your own personality.
It just tells you what to do. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, I mean, it's kind of nice that Samsung releases these phones kind of midway through the lifespan of the iPhone because it gives you some ideas of what the next iPhone. For instance, I think three lenses really are a nice feature. There was a rumor that iOS 13 might allow you to customize or modify the springboard on an iPad. This is a really good example. A springboard hasn't really changed substantially in years. The last big feature update was the ability to add folders. And it really doesn't use the real estate on an iPad well or efficiently at all. There was a rumor that perhaps the next version of iOS would allow you to do that. Credible?
It was rumored for iOS 12, but then they went into that performance kick, and that was the real deal. Like, they took the best engineers, like the people who made Springboard, there's different people who make it, but the people who worked on collection views and the people who worked on auto layout and had them optimize the framework. So those people were literally not available to do any further work on it. But it's supposedly been pushed off to this year, where we will see primarily for iPad, although I would think that iPhone needs some love in Springboard too, because that it is aging and it's no longer up to the task of everything we want to do with it. But it's super interesting. It's like Fraser Spears had a really good article a couple days ago about how iPad multitasking had failed him. Like, it was just too complicated. Swipe up again. He did it wrong. Got to try again. The app's not in the dock and all these different things. And, you know, a lot of people said, Apple's lost it. They used to be simple. And that's a fair criticism. But if you go back to like the Greg Christie, Baz Ortling, Imran Chowdhury time, they didn't have to solve problems like multi-window apps either. I'm interested in how they would do it, but there's a level of complexity now, and the split view version on Mac is just abandonware. But Windows has done really interesting stuff with different management systems and some of the Android devices as well. And it seems like there's, if you take some really, really good people and you apply them to how do we add these admittedly complex features, but keep the interaction models simple and easy for everyone to do. You know, and you do like the stuff that was written about in Creative Selection. You do a lot of real hardcore dog fooding on it. I'm hopeful that we could get something really good out of them this June.
Yeah, and the pressure is definitely on them to improve this sort of thing, particularly for the iPad, as they continue to position it as, here is why you shouldn't buy a Chromebook. Here is why you shouldn't buy a $1,000 or sub-$1,000 Windows machine, because we've got a machine that is not just as powerful, it is more powerful, and the build quality is going to be way better, and the level of the mobile software well adapted towards use of a Bluetooth keyboard is going to be you're going to be so much happier with this. It's all the stability and security of a Chromebook while still having the productivity and flexibility of a Microsoft Surface. And a lot of the missing pieces are exactly what Fraser Spears was talking about. It's the ability to manage multiple apps, manage a workflow where Apple can't really predict how I'm going to want to set up my apps, my resources for this one project I have to do this morning, and then quickly adapt this iPad for what the separate project I'm going to be working on after lunch. And so that's definitely a place where the iPad has let me down. I'm still like a daily iPad user, but I still do not instinctively know, how do I do split screen now? How do I move? Why is this now a floating window as opposed to I actually want this to be in a split section of the screen now? I used to know how to do that. Now I Now I still have to fumble a couple times before I get it right.
When is the, I'm just looking, trying to find, when is the beta of 13 come out?
June 2nd.
Okay.
Yeah. WWDC.
Right at WWDC. So anything we hear now is speculation, but I am.
June 3rd.
I am really looking forward to that. I feel, and I've said this a couple of times, that I love my iPad Pro, 12.9-inch iPad Pro, but it is great hardware hobbled by inadequate software.
Yeah, and the biggest challenge is to make you happy and, you know, someone who really doesn't like computers. Yeah. But that's the thing. That's what Apple is true. Like my sister, my sister is brilliant. She's director of psychology at a hospital. She's really smart. But she uses her iPhone primarily to play music, to make phone calls, and to barely to text. Like she doesn't no idea what control center is, doesn't want to know what notification center is. And any of those things would just get in her way. So to be able to make it like be what a wide range of customers, that's, you know, I'm glad it's not my problem, but it's absolutely their job.
It's a challenge. You know, I noticed though that Lisa, who is kind of more like your sister, rejects the iPad for serious work. She always ends up saying, I gotta get my MacBook Air because it's hard for her to do the things she needs to do, like proposals. Partly that's because Google Docs is not very good on the iPad. It's, for years, has been horrific on the iPad. I don't know if that's intentional or not.
It might be intentional.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe, huh? What do you think?
I mean, no, they're brilliant. They're brilliant web developers. Not. And I keep looking at I've asked every which way you can ask a question about the capabilities of iPad Safari. And they're like, we could write anything we want for this.
Yeah.
But it might not be a priority for them. They might look at the iPad numbers and say, look, we're happy to support Chrome, and if it's not Chrome, then you get whatever it's not Chrome experience.
Also, to be fair, I put a lot of time in on my Pixelbook, an actual Chromebook, and the modern Chromebooks can run Android apps from the Google Play Store as well as web apps. And I find myself, I do have the Google Docs app installed as an Android app, but I find myself gravitating towards the web version because it just works better as a full screen app, as opposed to an app that's designed for a phone screen, but then could scale up to a tablet size. So maybe it's not so much they're tanking their own apps on iOS so much as they speak the language of the mobile app very, very well, but their first language will always be web apps.
Yeah. Chrome. Yeah. I had a really funny experience. I was on a call with Lori earlier in Chrome, and Chrome froze, and it froze every Electron app on my computer, Skype and Slack all at the same time. I don't know what happened, but I had to like restart the whole thing.
That's not supposed to happen.
No.
But it was only the Electron apps. I should point out that Google Drive aside, Google's apps on iOS are very good, in some cases better than their Android versions. So it's... You know, I mean, Maps on iOS is excellent.
Well, I think iPhone, because like, I think specifically iPhone is really worth their while because it has such a huge market share and such valuable eyeballs. But when it comes to the priority of iPad, it's probably, you know, we do Chrome, which is not quite the web, but we do Chrome. Then we try to make it work on other browsers, depending on how popular they are. Then we do iPhone, and then, you know, maybe Android, and then probably iPad comes in one or two steps underneath that.
I wouldn't it's be priority. So sure. Because I wouldn't be so sure. How many, like Renee and Lori, how many times have you like talked to developers and found out like the reason why they decided to do an iPad version of their popular desktop app was because everybody in their shop bought iPads and the developers love their iPads and they want to do more things on their iPads. I wouldn't be surprised if I'm sure that in Mountain View on the Google campus, if they have the option of not using a Google an Android powered tablet. And they could use an iPad, they'll definitely be using that iPad instead. I've used both. And
until they all get Chromebooks.
let's see. Ming-Chi Kuo says Apple is going to start, get ready for this, manufacturing an AR headset. But don't get ready too soon because it won't be till the end of this year or early next
year. Soon, Leo. That sounds soon.
That does sound soon.
It's sooner than I would have thought.
Is it credible?
Does he mean in quantity or does he mean
mass production?
Mass production. Okay. That feels early to me because I don't know. It's almost like the conversation that we were having about an Apple video service is that I'm sure that if they were to make one, I'm sure that they would have good reasons to, and they would do something wonderful with it, and they'd have a business model for it. I don't knowing what I know about wearable, not technology or the finished products that are out there, but the actual components that are available to design from, I find it hard to imagine Apple looking at the device that they could build this time next year and decide that, yeah, we want an Apple logo on that, or yes, we want someone to point to that person on the subway wearing one of those things and know that they're an Apple user. They'd much rather make fun of people wearing Google Glass. They'd much rather look at other companies that are doing things that are now have 2 or 3 years of age to them, like HoloLens. And they're still not inconspicuous. They're also not delivering on what we imagine AR was going to be. It's still as well as it integrates into your field of view, you're still basically looking at one narrow gauge mail slot in which they could augment your reality, and they can't do anything with your peripheral vision. So it's hard for me to imagine Apple shipping something that I would think of as an Apple product anytime in the next year or two.
Well, traditionally they don't test in public, right? So it's not, I mean, any other company you would have, look how long Microsoft's been testing HoloLens. I mean, this most recent version is 4 years old, the one they just announced last month. And I guess it's a consumer version, although it's $3,500, and it's definitely not aimed at end users, it's aimed at business. So they're, in my opinion, still testing it. Magic Leap is definitely in developer mode, but they're doing it in public in some cases. Apple just doesn't do that, right? They're not going to release a developer
edition. They're using the iPhone to do it in public. They're using ARKit and Animoji and stuff to get us used to operating in augmented spaces and with augmented avatars, sort of very slowly boiling us like frogs instead of just throwing us into a boiling pot the way like some of the big headsets do. But that tech, and even these rumors suggest that this device is going to heavily rely on the iPhone more than even the original Apple Watch did, because all the compute, all the render, everything is going to be done on the iPhone. And then I imagine there'll be an untethered connection that spits it out onto the lenses in front of you. But the lenses will still have to capture a bunch of information in order to be spatially correct. And because you're not going to want to walk around with your iPhone at chest level to sort of like the data spigot. So, I mean, there sounds like there's still profound engineering, and there's possible that Apple's special projects teams have figured out a lot of this stuff.
Maybe they licked
really
it.
Far ahead in it, but
maybe they've licked
but
it.
It seems early to me.
It does seem. It seems like
as someone who's tried a lot of this stuff.
We haven't yet seen anything from anybody, including Magic Leap and HoloLens, that is anywhere near a consumer product.
Snapchat.
Again, none of that is near a consumer product. And I wouldn't expect Apple to do anything less than a consumer product.
Then at least an Apple Watch level Apple glasses.
Yeah, it's so easy to integrate a camera into a set of eyeglass frames. A display device, again, I just haven't seen anything outside of a lab that is capable of giving you something, even if you're going to wear like nerd glasses, that will not call attention to itself, to say nothing of the problem of what if you don't naturally wear glasses. I have an advantage. I can switch to, again, the nerd frames if I want thicker nerd frames, and that hide things inside the circuitry. But what if you don't need, what if you're one of those horribly disadvantaged people with perfect vision? That did not get made fun of and don't have to keep wiping lenses every single 10 minutes. I just don't know how that really works.
Would be really interesting. Would they Ray-Bans. Flip up?
Just make a part. Yeah. Do you partner with Ray-Bans the way you partner with Hermes?
Yeah, make them sunglasses.
Renee, that's something I was actually thinking of. Remember how they created so many links into the fashion and design communities when they originally did the Apple Watch? I would not be surprised at all if they were already working with designers to say, here's how to make this thing palatable. And also, when they've got their eyes 5 years in the future, here are special design frames so that just like there's only one style of Apple Watch, he said, pointing at an absolutely bare wrist. I know. But the thing is, when you see it, you see that that person's obviously wearing an Apple Watch. If it became just like people know that you're wearing AirPods, or at least they did until China started knocking off the design for really, really bad Bluetooth earphones. But they could do the exact same thing, where one of the ways they could make it palatable is that, yes, you're wearing this device on the side of your head. But hey, look, it's one of those Apple things. So it could actually be a brand identity thing for them.
So Apple sunglasses, they just happen to have AR. I like that.
I mean, well, I like the Dwayne Wayne idea that Leo had.
Yeah. Flip them up. I do think, I'm so nostalgic for the Apple that like would release something and everybody gasped and it changed the world. And the iPhone was one of those things, the iPad to some degree, iPod for sure. But in all three cases, they weren't new products in a category. But what
and remember, like Microsoft ran to get the HP Slate out at CES right before the iPad, and it had like a little push button ejector for the Windows sticker.
Yeah, it's horrible. So imagine that Apple has somehow, you know, amazingly come up with some solution, and we'll all talk back, you know, think back. Oh, remember March 2020 when Apple released these and it changed the world, right? I mean, I think that I would like to see that. Let's all root for Apple to do that. I think that'd be really cool.
If anyone could do it, it would be Apple or possibly Samsung. But Samsung
is that a fair thing to say these days? I think that's true. Maybe it was true in the past, but we haven't seen.
I think Apple is still unique in their ability to take a bunch of disparate technologies and package it in a way that's really accessible to mainstream customers. That's always seems to have been their secret sauce. Like, again, like tons of phones before iPhone, tons of tablets before iPad, a few watches before Apple Watch, a bunch of Bluetooth headsets before AirPods, but they seem to be able to carve down, not to everyone's liking, but to like a single opinionated view of what this product can be for a wide swath of audience.
That's kind of a downhill slope you just described. You had the iPhone, then the iPad, then the Apple Watch, and the AirPods. Yeah. it's kind of, yeah, but they're not the Apple that of 15 years ago or 10 years ago. I mean,
but we're also more mature technologically.
It's like hard to come up with
UFO, like flying cars. I mean, it's like the big one, but.
Yeah. Well, speaking of cars, Apple may still be in the car business that we talked about the layoffs, but Mike Elgin wrote a very good piece in Computer World, his predictions for Apple's self-driving future. And among other things, he said, people are getting a lot of it wrong. He said, Apple's not killing off its self-driving car program. When you have 5,000 employees working at least part-time on Titan and 1,200 full-time employees, laying off 200 isn't that significant. It's false. You know, he says people point to the high disengagement rate of Apple's self-driving cars, much higher than anybody else, including Google. Only Uber is worse. But he says, but we don't know if Apple's maybe being, as they often are, overcautious. Maybe they disengage more than necessary because they don't want, you know, they're being conservative in their approach. In fact, Apple did tell the DMV that when they told them that. It's not true. I didn't even know this was a rumor that Apple has a secret former military base test track outside Silicon Valley. That is not true. Apple's self-driving car may not even be a car. Mike Elgin says it probably will be a van that's basically a rolling living room.
I like this one. I like that little descriptor. In the couple of times I've seen self-driving cars, there's this prototype that looks sort of like a bus with a bunch of windows. It's small, you know, like a van, but it's all windows and there's no seats that all face directly forward. Some of them face backward and there's a table in the middle. So it's more like riding in a train car or something like that, because you don't need somebody facing forward driving the car. So why not just mix it up and make the thing that you're sitting in to transport you into whatever you want it to be?
Absolutely.
I love this idea.
The first automobiles looked a lot like carriages, horse-driven carriages, and they slowly morphed into something a little more appropriate to the form factor. Why should a self-driving car look like a car that you have to drive?
Mm-hmm. Well, also because like Sammy Davis Jr. lost an eye because of things sticking out of the dashboard, and people without seat belts and with this club car kind of car design, people getting it again being thrust against tables and getting killed unnecessarily. It's there's a lot of debate about what kind of safety regulations are important to hold over for a self-driving car and which ones they can actually do away with, and with the thought that if this passenger is unrestrained, perhaps we can offset that with the additional safety of certifying the self-driving technology as ways to that they're never going to fall asleep, they're never going to be exceeding the speed limit, and they're going to be able to get out of almost any jam that any bad driver puts them in.
Well, I would like, I can't wait to get my augmented reality glasses in my self-driving living room.
They're not separate things, Leo. Aren't you getting this yet? You get into the van and it shows you Jurassic Park dinosaurs as you commute to work. They're one thing.
It's a vehicle. It's reality. It's a movie theater. It's a restaurant. It's a vehicle.
Are you getting
it's
it
a
yet?
Movie theater. It's a restaurant. Okay, that's the keynote I do want an invitation to, Ray.
Yes.
If you could pull some strings for me. Let's take a little break. We got more to come. Renee Ritchie and Lori Gill from iMore, Andy Iannacco from Boston Public Radio. Great to have all three of you. This is a nice team. What do you think, guys? Should we allow girls on Mac Break Weekly?
Allow?
What are the things to say?
We had a sign on the door that said, no girls allowed. I think I could take that down now.
I think that's a good idea.
Yes, I think you're right.
It's going to be Lori, Christina Warren, and a couple other people, Leo, will barely get invited.
I've done that with Twit, and it's wonderful. I just sit back and let it go. It's so great. Yes, soon you won't need any men anymore. I think parthenogenesis is just around the corner.
Did you read Why the Last Man? Where it's this whole comic strip. I forget if it's Kirkman or Vaughn who did it, but the whole thesis is that there are two sexes until they invent cloning. And as soon as cloning is invented, just all the men are destroyed.
Yeah.
Because you don't need them anymore.
Exactly. Yeah. That's it. Hey, if slugs can do it, why can't we? Our show today brought to you by Capterra. We, if you're looking for business software, and by the way, a lot of you ought to be. I still get calls from all the time for people saying, well, you know, I've got a 10-year-old Mac and it can only go to Snow Leopard, but I can't get rid of it because it's the only thing that will run our heating and air conditioning software. Or I manage my veterinary business on a Windows 95 computer, but I have to because they haven't updated the software in 20 years. Things like that. No, there's great business software for your line of business, no matter what it is out there. And I've got a great place to go to find out what's out there now. It's called Capterra. And best of all, it's free. Capterra has over 700 categories of business software. Everything from project management to email marketing to yoga studio management software. If you are looking for software for your business, if you have antiquated old software you'd like to replace, this is the first place you ought to go, capterra.com/MacBreak. Because not only can you drill down into the categories, you can check boxes to say features you need, uncheck boxes, features you don't need. You can put together comparisons of the products that seem like they fit. And then you can read really, really good detailed reviews. There's three quarters of a million reviews of products on Capterra.com from real users of the software you're looking at. So it's like going out there and saying, hey, what do you think? And finding out from hundreds of people who use that program. No matter what kind of software your business needs, Capterra makes it easy to not only discover the right solution, but to get the reviews and buy it fast. Join the millions of people who use Capterra every month to find the right tools for your business. Hard to believe, but this is absolutely free, and it is one of the best resources, best kept secrets for people. I know so many people who are using business software that's just out of date, hasn't been updated. Maybe you got some high school kid to write it for you. There's better stuff out there. Find out right now. Go to capterra.com/MacBreak. They still have that big book of software you can give your boss. Capterra.com/MacBreak. It's capterra.com/MacBreak. Capterra is software selection simplified. Frankly, I would love to see a Capterra for consumer software. It's when you're looking for a program, the comparison thing is so great, and the reviews. Oh, you know what, Capterra? I got a business idea for you. Call me. Hey, happy birthday to, well, if you go to google.com, you'll know, 30th birthday. Anybody want to guess? Do you know?
Yeah.
The web.
Yeah. The world wide.
Angle bracket blink. Angle bracket. Happy birthday. Angle bracket slash blink.
Look at the great Google Doodle today for the world wide web. The only thing they've got wrong is that really should be a black Next Cube, not an IBM PC. But I guess for many of us, it was an IBM PC we ran our first world wide web browser on. 30 years ago. Is it 30 years ago that Tim Berners-Lee, the inventor of World Wide Web, put his first web page up? What is the actual anniversary? Do you know?
It better not be GeoCities launching. It better not be.
The first cat videos.
Oh, it's the first Angel time fire. That a monkey got punched.
Let's see, because he's a physicist. He was working at CERN, the Geneva Particle Lab, and they had a bunch of networked computers. And he wrote up. Okay, so this is the anniversary of his proposal, March 1989, for, quote, a large hypertext database with typed links. There wasn't a lot of interest initially. I'm reading from Wikipedia. But Berners-Lee was encouraged by his boss, Mike Sendall, to begin implementing the system on a newly acquired Next workstation. So you see, Steve Jobs is involved even here. There's the Next Cube that he used the first. This is, I think, is it the Computer History Museum?
See, Leo, Apple doesn't always create the disruption themselves, but they make the tools for which the world can be disrupted.
Exactly. There you go. So I'm not sure when the first page went up. I think it was Christmas 1990. So we're going to have another 30th anniversary to celebrate. But this is the 30th anniversary for Information Management, a proposal, March 1989. And in fact, he says this is from him at W3.org. And he says, this is the HTML file generated from the RTF file by Microsoft Word. You want to see it? Here you go. He says he can't open the Word file anymore, but at least you can see this. And some of it's not so good. But,
style tag.
There's an HTML version that looks a little bit better.
And Apple is like, if there were a DNA test and Maury Povich would wind up like giving Apple news that it's now is way, way behind on his payments, because it's not just the connection to Next, but remember that it was an expression of an old concept of hypertext that had been around since like the late 60s, early 70s, and of which HyperCard was really one of the first practical consumer facing things that actually did hypertext. Really, there's very, very, very little difference between a lot of different HyperCard stacks and a modern web page, which is why it continues to frustrate me. There isn't a web version of HyperCard made by Apple.
Yes. Bill Atkinson did release the HyperCard software to the Computer History Museum. If you want to, Andy, you want to start working on it.
Go ahead and make that happen.
I can't. Do you think that I'm smart enough to be able to understand any of Bill Atkinson's code? I'm so flattered you think so. Oh, wait, a semicolon. I know what a semicolon is. I just don't know anything before that.
And by the way, Tim Berners-Lee said this would provide an excellent project with which to try our new object-oriented programming techniques. I think it was Ted Nelson, actually. In fact, Berners-Lee refers to Ted Nelson's 1967 piece, Getting It Out of Our System, in Information Retrieval, a Critical Review. Ted Nelson really was the guy, I think, who coined the term hypertext and was the first to propose this idea of linking. We had him on Triangulation not so long ago. He still, as far as I know, lives in a houseboat in Sausalito. Not so far away from here. And yeah, HyperCard absolutely must have been a big influence on Tim Berners-Lee. Right? HyperCard, yeah, he must have used it. Anyway, happy birthday, World Wide Web. Not the internet. People are saying it's the internet's birthday. No, no. Just the World Wide Web. Just that idea.
Just the WWW.
Just the WWW.
DARPA gets no cake today. No cake for you today, DARPA.
No.
And on this date, we can revel in the classic joke that never gets any old. Leave it to engineers to come up with an acronym that shortens a word but actually makes it three times longer number of syllables.
World Wide Web or WWW. Three syllables three versus nine. Excellent point, Andrew. So I guess we should probably talk about this. Elizabeth Warren, candidate for Democratic nomination for president in 2020, the election's coming, says we should break up the tech giants, including Apple. I don't think she thought out the Apple part all that well. And I would point you to, as always, a great Ben Thompson article in Stratechery in which he says Warren is wrong. he does praise her for kind of thinking about how much power our big tech companies have, too much power over our economy. He just says that breaking them up may have some really hideous unintended consequences. Yeah. And I kind of agree.
So I had that same thought, and then I talked to Nile today for tomorrow's Vector, so I got a chance to ask him about the interview. And the breakup part is getting a lot of the attention, but she seems like she has a 4-point plan where, depending on how valuable you are, different things kick in. Like if you make, I forget the number, but if you make only $20 billion,
you're cut up.
Yeah, you're fine.
But that runs directly contrary to actual U.S. law, which doesn't say you're too big, you have to be broken up.
Yes.
You have to be a monopoly to be broken up. There is no current law that says, "Oh, you're worth $100 trillion." We got to break you up. You're too big.
The U.S. is like common welfare, and the EU is competition based. They have very different antitrust systems. She's introducing a third one, which she thinks could be less expensive than having a bunch, like having Justin Trudeau in charge of. Saying, but on the value of the company and the size of the ecosystem. And again, like, I don't think any of these ideas scale because, for example, at Apple's size, they should not be allowed. And her assertion is they have too much access to data and to positioning to be allowed to offer apps on their own store. They should not be allowed to compete.
Yeah, this seems to be her biggest problem, which makes this, by the way, makes zero sense.
But like Walmart has access to data and to shelving positions that they're like Procter & Gamble don't. And should Microsoft not be allowed to sell Halo? Should Bungie be spun off and everyone should get
Halo? I think there's a good case to be made that Google shouldn't have YouTube because it's going to just mess with the search
results.
It's
the number one and two search engines in the world.
I think you can make that case, but it doesn't make any sense that Apple shouldn't sell apps in its own app store. That makes no sense at all.
Well,
maybe
them,
she
right?
wants
just
to
put
say
back in the US.
Other stores should be able to sell apps on the iPhone. That would make more sense that there should be multiple stores.
Well,
but that reduces security significantly. So
yeah, see, that's why this most of what her campaign has committed to is in a Medium post that she published, or her election campaign or whatever published. And one of the points that she's making is that it's particularly as relates to Apple is that it's wrong for, given that Apple makes money off of every purchase off the App Store, it's wrong for them to lock their devices to just one App Store. They should allow people to either sideload apps or allow other App Stores to App Store apps to be installed on the device. So I mean, it's not as though what she's saying doesn't make any sense. It's just that it really does, to my eyes, it comes across at this point as campaign rhetoric as opposed to a well-thought-out vision of digital policy. I think that in the long run, what she's proposing is going to hurt more consumers than it helps because she's trying to apply 100-year-old ideas of trust busting to a 2019 technological marketplace, and the two aren't really compatible. And when she does really mention about the breakup of monopolies, she talks about like AT&T, for instance. And the thing is, the reason why this was AT&T was originally a government granted monopoly. It wasn't that they wasn't like maybe they acted like robber barons, but at some point the government said that AT&T until like 1984, you're exempt from antitrust because it's so important that we have this phone system and telegraph system in place, and it's going to be so expensive to put in that we'll reach more people and we'll become, we need this thing built up. And the only way to do it is to not have 18 different competing telephone networks. So it's in the public's best interest to allow this trust to continue. I think that it would be appropriate for them to say that there are certain huge, huge companies like Google, but not Facebook, where yes, Google making so much money off of ads and having so many products that allow them to place ads and to collect more information to make their ad database more valuable is beneficial to consumers because this is what gives us Google Maps for free. This is what gives us Google Docs for free. This is what gives us Chromebooks and Android devices that are very, very cheap to produce because they are essentially giving away the operating system for free. It's a big enough benefit to consumers that we can allow this particular company to exist the way it is. Facebook, I think, would be a different thing because they just make it so clear that they don't care. about anything that they do, so long as it keeps the fire hose of information is going into the giant holding tanks in Facebook's campus. So I prefer to read this proposal as, again, here is a early campaign statement, campaign rhetoric thing, that if she became the actual Democratic nominee, she would have to release a very long 100-page PDF with all kinds of other academics and engineers who signed off on this thing to actually outline how she could do this without ensuring that it doesn't cost us 18 cents a mile to navigate using any sort of a Google Maps sort of product.
This whole campaign, I think, is just kind of like looking at the wrong things that we need to fight when it comes to technology. Right now, the most important thing that we need to do is protect our data and our security.
I agree.
There should be the procedures and regulations in place to take care of that, not to break up these big tech companies. That should be so farther down the line that she should be standing on a platform of enforcing some sort of methodology toward transparency for how these major companies are collecting our data. I think that Elizabeth Warren is incredible, and I think that I'm confused when I read this as to where she came up with this idea to make this the thing that she stands on right now, when there are so many other things that are more important that should be tackled first.
I think you nailed it.
Absolutely.
This is the wrong battle to fight. Thompson quotes Mike Masnick on this. He says, Mike says, none of this is to say we shouldn't be concerned about big internet companies with too much power. It's a perfectly reasonable concern. But just because you want to do something, and this is something, doesn't mean it's the something we should do. And I'd be much more interested in a candidate who had concrete proposals on how to protect our data and our privacy going forward than, oh, let's just chop it all up, because the consequences, that's a massive undertaking.
Yeah.
It's probably a non-starter, and the consequences are unknown and undoubtedly significant. Whereas I think you could reasonably get up in front of Congress, a newly elected president, and say, we've got to enact privacy legislation, and we've got to do it now. And I think that actually that's the will of the people and the will of most of the Congress right now.
Yeah, and I hope this doesn't come across as ageist. Maybe it is. I don't think it is. But this is why I don't think our next chief executive and the majority of our Congress people should be people who are 69 or 70 years old. It's the fact that her first huge public statement about this uses the language of antitrust, which is something that has been a known problem for decades, as opposed to the subtleties of technology, I think is a little telling, and at least prejudices me to continue to think that even people who are my age, I'm Generation X, which means that I grew up with computers, I grew up with the internet, even I grew up with email. I absolutely did not grow up with a device in my pocket that keeps me connected all the time. I didn't. It took me a little while even to get the hang of text messaging, because I didn't know, do I have to say goodbye? No, really, the conversation just, even if we don't continue this conversation for 10 days, it's all one conversation. Wow. And that these are things that you have to grow up with a certain thing. You have to grow up in a certain world, as opposed to getting accustomed to a new world. When it comes to making policy about how big a tech company should allow to become, what privacy controls, what privacy rights should be, what surveillance rights should be, this is where you need somebody who is in their 30s or 40s or even younger than that. Something that I should be doing.
You're exactly right with that. We have every time something comes up in government where they're trying to figure out what technology is doing, and they go and they ask all those questions in their meetings and their hearings, it's terrible because they don't know what they're talking about. But the younger people come up and join the government officials, they know a lot more than these older generations do about how to navigate technology, and they have just a better understanding of it, just because, like you said, they grew up with phones in their pockets. They were 5 when they started using technology, as opposed to 15 or something like that. And right now, the people that are in office don't understand technology enough to even ask the right questions to get to the right place. They're just kind of in this big... How, you know, what are you doing? What do you do? How come how come when I do a search on Google, what I look for doesn't come up? Well, we don't know. Technology is so much bigger and deeper than that. And we definitely need younger generations that will grow up into these government officials that have a much better understanding of the way technology works before we can start attacking how they're doing business and what they can do, what they should be doing differently.
I am almost to level 40 on Pokemon Go. More importantly,
woohoo!
Leo is still very, very young, youthful, and fresh in his thinking.
I just want to say I want to get to 40 because any second now,
right?
Wizards Unite is going to come out and it's all over for Pokemon Go. Niantic gave previews to a number of game blogs and so forth. And I know that you are paying close attention at iMore.com because, of course, you are the headquarters for Pokemon Go information. Renee, what do we know about Harry Potter Wizards Unite? It's based on the Niantic Ingress / Pokemon Go platform, right?
Yeah, so I mean, Android Central, our Android site, covered Ingress a lot, and we've covered Pokemon Go. But I have to admit, I'm still Pokemon Going. So Lori, with Russell Holly and Luke Filipovich, has been doing all the Wizard Unite stuff. So before she,
oh,
says,
I should ask Lori then.
Yeah, so otherwise she might just look at me and say, you know, I don't know, like curse me and have my Pokemon shrivel and die. You know, Adava Kedavra, Pikachu. And
wait a minute, I did not know that Lori Gill was the Wizards Unite expert.
Well, now there's a couple of us that are trying to be experts so that poor Renee doesn't get trapped doing. Actually, Luke Filipovich is he's doing some heavy coverage of it, and we've got him on board to.
This is his article in iMore, yeah.
Yeah, and he will hopefully be the Renee Ricci of Wizards Unite. But
it does. At first, I thought they would just skin Pokemon Go and turn gyms into castles and stops into, I don't know.
It's like sort of, but to the
it's
next
really
level,
a di- right? very. It looks like a very play looks very 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 different. Yeah. But I have said I am on record as saying if you thought the Pokemon Go craze of July 2016 was out of control, you ain't seen nothing.
Yet. Oh, that's why they made the last movie to sort of temper down the servers. So
Lori, do we know when? It looks like it's getting close.
It is definitely getting close, but no, they're not even close to giving us an idea of when. But you can see from the Harry Potter Wizards Unite website that there's some gameplay that they're sharing with us now. So it gives us if I were to guess based on how Pokemon Go started, and this is definitely just a big, huge guess, I would say this summer. And I'm only basing that on the gameplay that they're showing us, which means that they're far
outside.
Enough along.
You're going to play outside, right?
You do have to play outside.
Yeah.
It's some of this. So it's the same basic mechanics that you get from Pokemon Go and Ingress, which is that you do have to navigate the world around you. But there's going to be quite a few different things that you'll come across. And it's not just a matter of sort of spinning a stop to gather some
right.
goodies. There's the thing that I'm seeing that I find most interesting is that you can drop a port key, which in the wizarding world of Harry Potter, a port key transports you from one location to another. So there's this augmented reality version of a port key that you can drop. And then it looks like you'll be able to just sort of enter a world where you'll, even though you're still in the same park or the same building, when you look on your phone, you'll actually get to see an entirely different view and kind of look around within that view to find what you're looking for. I think that's a nice sort of next level adding to the gameplay that's already there. Instead of catching Pokemon, obviously, you're trying to capture these magical objects that have somehow accidentally found their way into the real, or not real, the non-magical world. So that's your version of catching Pokemon is catching, they're calling them
foundables. Isn't that weird?
Yes.
They've made up a new word.
Yeah. But you're also going to be doing some battle things instead of fight, like setting up your Pokemon to battle against each other in the gyms. You'll be going to fortresses where you will perform spells on other players' avatars. And this kind of based on the view on what they show in the gameplay, it's very similar to what you would see in some other Harry Potter style games where you might have to swipe the screen in a certain pattern in order to activate that particular spell.
Yeah, you have to learn a spell, yeah.
Yeah, and you might have to use circular motion to, you know, attack them or use a side swipe motion to block them or something like that. So it looks like that's some slight changes to the gameplay that we've seen in Ingress and Pokemon Go. But it is a same basic understanding of you have to go outside, you have to navigate the world around you in order to play.
Well, if I'm sorry if you're an iOS user, you're out of luck. But if you're an Android user, they are now open for pre-registration, which means they may invite you to early access for the game. So it is on the Android store as a pre-register. Harry Potter Wizards Unite. I'm going to pre-register because I want to get out of Pokemon Go as quickly as I possibly can.
So Lori...
and Lisa's already told me she's not starting a new game. As soon as Wizards Unite come out, she's dropping Pokemon Go and going to start taking pictures and enjoying life. But right now, we're in a bitter battle to get to level 40, and she's like 3 million, 4 million points ahead of me. So I think she's going
to... Go, Lisa!
She's going to win. We're both 39 right now.
I just need to get this out there for Renee and Lori. I understand that Imore is going to be dark for 3 days around this event. I don't play Pokemon Go, and I haven't even read the Harry Potter book. So if you need me to come in as just like Andy. Sort of like when... Sort of when like Captain Marvel has to bring in like She-Hulk or Andy, Captain America.
Andy, just please do yourself a favor and just get all 7 Harry Potter books on Audible.
I know.
And don't leave the house till you've read them all.
I have. It's not that I haven't read them for a reason. It's just I haven't gotten around to them yet. I do. I own all of them on Kindle, and I own like 4 of them on Audible. I just haven't. I feel like it's like when a new Neil Gaiman book comes out. I don't want to read it in batches on the train. I want to. Yeah. Here's my pot of tea.
Neil is actually a much better writer than J.K. Rowling, but
yeah.
The Harry Potter is more a cultural phenomenon than anything
else. She made a super interesting, like her characters and world are super interesting. Yeah. She doesn't render it as well.
I agree. I think there are better writers out there. But
when the first set of Harry Potter books came out, she single-handedly got kids back into reading. And that hadn't happened in my entire lifetime. And I was so happy to see. I was working at an elementary school at the time.
Oh,
and
neat.
Every child's face was in a book. And it was incredible to see that.
Including my kids. And that's probably why I have such affection for the series.
Exactly.
And by the way, you have now seen a direct live illustration of why our republic is in such deep trouble. We started talking about, you know, whether the big tech companies should be broken up, and I went squirrel, and you all followed.
All right. It's a Tuesday, and we're all getting used to the clocks being ahead an hour. Give us this just for this one show. It'll be fine.
I am equally excited about the election and Harry Potter Wizards Unite. That's all I can say. One is going to make a bigger impact on society, however.
I
think you know which one.
Harry Potter.
Our show today, and besides, there's only one that Canadians can play along. Our show today brought to you by WordPress. I'll tell you what, I got off of the social networks in August, and except for a few brief foolish flirtations, have stayed off. And my antidote to that is my own website at WordPress.com. Having your own website, frankly, is something everybody should do, not just every individual, but every business. It breaks my heart when I see businesses say, oh, but I got a Facebook page. I don't need a website. You need a website. You need a place to call your own that reflects you exactly, that no one could take away from you. And it's so easy to do. There's no reason not to have a website. In fact, it even can be done for free at WordPress.com. But the beauty of WordPress.com is start for free, but as you grow, as your needs grow, WordPress will grow with you, to the point with some of the biggest publications in the world, the most influential companies use WordPress for their websites. That's how good WordPress is. Start easy, grow big at WordPress.com. It lets anyone pursue whatever it is they love by launching a site that's free to start with room to grow, no two-week trials, no hidden fees. You own your content forever. Upload audio, video, text, anything that you create, put it on WordPress. If you know a teenager, get them to start a website. I know they're all perfectly happy with their little Snapchat feed. Get them to put some of the best stuff on a website by their name, next to their name, because you could tell them this. Show them. What do people find when you search for your name on Google? You want it to be the stuff you put up there. I'm at leolaporte.com, and that's a WordPress.com site. It has been for 12 years, I might add. Not always at that URL, because I only recently got leolaporte.com. But I'm a 12-year subscriber to WordPress.com. In fact, I even used it before WordPress.com. I was a self-hosted WordPress site. WordPress.com made it so much easier. They take care of the installation, the running of it, the updates, the security. You know, the new Gutenberg editor is there. You don't have to do anything about it. You can use it if you want. All of that stuff. 24-hour, 7-day-a-week support from the best support team ever, because they're all WordPress experts. They're not, you know, some support guy. They are WordPress lovers. So they're there to help you 24 hours a day, even on weekends. Millions of people use WordPress.com every day to turn their dreams into reality. You need to, too. I don't care if you're a social influencer making millions of dollars on Instagram. You still need a website. That ain't old-fashioned. That's the truth. WordPress.com/MacBreak. You can, you will, and WordPress will help you do it. I'm such a big fan. WordPress.com/MacBreak, because that's where you can get 15% off your brand new website. Ah, now we're talking. WordPress.com/MacBreak. That's where I'm going to put all of my Wizards Unite content on my on my WordPress.com.
Your screenshots?
Yeah, my screenshots. you know, it's at first it was like, well, where am I going to post pictures? I don't have Instagram. Or where am I going to, you know, talk about stuff? I don't have Facebook. I don't have Twitter. And put it on your blog. It's your content. Keep it where you, and if you want to still use those others, you just link back to it. It's easy. All right. I think it's time for our picks. Before we get out of here, let's start with Lori Gill.
You're always making me go first.
You don't have to. You want to make, let's make Renee go first. No.
All okay.
Right. It's up to you.
No, I don't mind.
You have a pick.
I actually have a really great pick.
In fact, and I'm jealous because did yours come?
I'm holding it in my hand right
now. I'm waiting for mine.
It's the HyperDrive for the iPad Pro. Comes in the Kickstarter version. Comes in this cute little kit.
Oh, I'm so jealous. Where is mine?
Yeah. I'm sure it's coming soon. I don't know why I got mine before you got yours. I guess because they like me better. But the HyperDrive, for anybody who doesn't know what it is, it's a hub or a dongle, if depending on how you want to word it, that comes with a couple of different little gadgets that connect to your iPad Pro, which previously you couldn't do this kind of stuff. And now that iPad Pro has USB-C, there's a lot more things that you can connect to it than you used to be able to. It's got a HDMI, USB-C, micro SD, and SD, and 3.5 millimeter headphone jack, and a USB-A. One of the things, believe it or not, that I ended up liking the most about it was the headphone jack, because I realized...
Oh, it has a headphone jack?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so it's a great little thing. I've connected it to my television set. I've connected it to my monitor, using my iPad as the system that connects to these other things. It's actually, this little thing is pretty great. It comes with a couple of different tools to help you use it in a different way. If you wanted to connect it different, I'm not sure what the final package will be when they sell it just regularly on their website, but through the Kickstarter, it came with a couple little extras so that you could connect with a little bit of an extra leeway so that you don't have to, if you're using a stand or a case that makes it so that this doesn't fit properly, you can kind of plug it in this way and can connect it like that. And it has a little different lever on it. So if you don't have to use you don't have to plug it in one way, you can flip it the other way. And this little extra piece allows you to decide which side that you want to keep it on, depending on the if you are using a case or not. So it's a pretty versatile little thing, and it has a lot of stuff going to it. And my favorite is the way it just clicks into the side of your iPad instead of something that hangs off the side. It just clicks right in there and acts as sort of a slight extension to your iPad. You don't have to worry about it dangling or falling off or anything like that. It just sits in right there. So
when did you get yours?
It came about 2 weeks ago.
This is one of the reasons I hate Kickstarter. So I went and, oh, you didn't fill out the survey yet. So I ordered two. I have two coming in the early bird special and all that. But so we'll see. Just drives me crazy. I presume you just fill out the survey, right?
Well, I mean, that's nothing against you. It's not your fault. But it's also very possible that why yours didn't come in has nothing to do with when you filled out the survey. It could be anything.
Well, I just filled it out now, so it's going to be.
Oh, wait, you hadn't filled it out yet until just now?
No. After I filled it out, which is a dopey survey that didn't ask for anything important, then it said, okay, we'll send you another survey when the thing ends. I freaking hate Kickstarter.
Yeah.
I don't have the best results. By the way, you can't get it on Kickstarter anymore, but it is on Indiegogo now.
Oh,
great. I think that's because Kickstarter, once they start shipping, it won't let them plug it.
Do any more orders.
Yeah. It's weird because Sano, I owned previous hyperdrives. They're a known company. They make these, and they've just decided this is a better way for them to sell a product is to do it through Kickstarter than to just sell it on retail. So. Yes, highly recommended. I have their other one, and it's fantastic. And I wish I'd had this one, especially for the headphone jack. Renee Ritchie, pick of the week.
Yes, sir. So mine is not a new pick. I'm sure Jason Snellis picked it half a dozen times on this very show, at least. But it's getting a little bit of attention again because they're doing a promotion in honor of Captain Marvel, and it is Marvel Unlimited. It is. Yay. It's so trite to say the Netflix of something, but with this, you pay a monthly subscription, or I think like you get a discount if you play yearly, and you get access to massive amounts of Marvel back catalog of titles. Right now, they're showing off a lot of Captain Marvel stuff because of the movie, and there's so many great things there, like the Kree-Skrull War, all the Avengers, the Warbird stuff, the Herald of Galactus. There's just so many great stories in that universe, and they do a good job of sort of, if you are primarily interested because of the movies, they do a really good job of finding you the quintessential stories, the ones that the script writers and the directors drew from. But there's also just everything, like all the X-Men, all the Avengers, all the Fantastic Four, all the Spider-Man, all the everything that Marvel has been producing, just back to the very, very early Stan Lee days. And if you are a huge comics nerd, the app just works great, especially on an iPad. It's just a phenomenal experience. And it's so much easier than carrying 40 comic boxes around on your back.
Here. I think that Marvel has created a really amazing product because it's not just the fact that they have been assiduously filling in the back catalog every single year to the point where there's almost nothing that you won't hear about. If someone on Reddit in a comic book forum mentions something that a limited series from 1981 is probably on Marvel Comics Unlimited, even though it was such a bad seller that it's never made it to trade paperback. And the other great thing is that it really brought me kind of back around to Marvel Comics because a lot of the stuff that I have to format this correctly. A lot of the things that they publish are absolutely unreadable because they do their entire publishing schedule around these huge events. And so you think that, okay, great. So I'll read this 10-issue Absolute Power miniseries that's the big event. Like, oh, well, actually, no, this doesn't tell you how this event happened and someone will just say, wow, I just watched this person die. Bummer, huh? Let's move on to the next thing. And you had to like buy this other comic and this other series to find out how this actually affected this character. And it's just horrible. But I'm so smart that it took me three times of spending $60 to try to read one of these series that I suddenly said, nope, no more. If there's any hint of an event, I am not even remotely interested in it. But with my Marvel Unlimited series, series. I'm willing to wait a year for it to hit Marvel Unlimited, and then I can just say, wait, what the hell is Quasar talking about? Flip. Okay, there's now I understand what Quasar was talking about, and I didn't have to spend $4 extra to find that out. So yes,
I just read the old stuff. Pick. Yeah, I read so before there because I don't like the cross like the huge crossovers either. I just read a lot of the classic like the George Perez stuff, and I'm very much artist driven. The Arthur Adams stuff, it just, and Starlin, they're just the most amazing artists. The Claremont Bernier of X-Men, the Bernier of just there's so many pivotal stories in that collection. It's amazing, huge value.
And you can download them to the iPad app, so you don't have to. You can still read them on the plane. Really, especially for $60 a year, that is something that we were talking about subscription plans earlier today. If you are going to deliver me basically every Marvel comic ever published with only a few gaps, that I'm willing to spend $60 a year for. That is a very good value proposition.
The space that you save alone makes it worth it.
Oh, God. It just everything. Comixology. I won't get this into a 30-minute tangent, but it's if you told me, like, even when I was like 25 years old, that, by the way, you know how like you never travel with like comic books because you're not going to be able to keep them in good shape on this flight from Boston to San Francisco and back again, and you're going to lose some, or you know, also you're going to look like a big freaking nerd. Like I'm in business class holding up a copy of Peter Parker, the Spectacular Spider-Man. I don't think so. And the ability to say, no, actually, not only do you have comic books, but you now have pretty much every comic book you're ever interested in ever rereading ever again right there on the device. It's like, oh, I think I'm going to start jogging and eating a little better because I want to live to be your age, future Andy.
Speaking of future Andy, what's your pick of the week, sir?
Okay, my pick is also a Kickstarter. It doesn't ship until May, however. It is a vinyl LP with no sound recorded on it. It is. I'm not saying that it's a blank LP. I mean, literally, side one is they cut an LP with 20 minutes of silence. Then you flip it over and you also get another 20 minutes of silence. It's called Silent Meditation. So that it's like if you want silence to meditate to. And I was fully on board when I read the description where it's half tongue-in-cheek, half serious. They're saying this will have the desired effect even if your gift recipient doesn't own an LP. It works just as well whether it's playing or not playing. But then I started thinking about how an LP is a record player is wonderful because it's not digital. There's always going to be like little pops and crackles. And I had to, what got me to pay $20 for this was
you paid that, $20 for this?
Yes, I did, because I kind of want to occasionally drop the needle down and just listen to 20 minutes of clicks, pops, and just that's what I need to clear my mind. Also, I just like the idea of this, and I almost never buy tangible objects on Kickstarter. It's almost always someone who wants to do a comic book or wants to write a novel or someone wants to do like a series of art prints that this idea is so creative and interesting that I just want to give you money for being that weird and that committed to waving your freak flag as high and proud as possible.
Under their Q&A, the question is, are you planning on any future release? And their answer is, there have been rumors of a live album. I want to buy this just for the joke. This is such a funny thing.
Oh, my God. You guys are suckers. Is that a Kickstarter by any chance?
It is a Kickstarter.
Oh, what a surprise.
Don't you feel that Kickstarter is the new As Seen on TV? They're like, no, wait, there's more. There's a second side of silence.
Oh my
like all
God.
The stuff my parents
what is on
buy.
The other side, by the way?
Another silence. 20 seconds of silence. they also say that if you don't have 20 minutes to meditate, just set it to 45 RPM and you'll get 15 minutes of silence for meditation.
Actually, the second side B is just five John Cage songs.
that's a Harvard joke.
Actually, they in the Q&A, some parts of this sound like John Cage's 4 minutes, 33 seconds. Is that intentional? They say, no, but what a compliment. Cage's composition was music, and he wanted to include all sounds of that definition. This is not music, nor were any musicians involved in this recording.
You guys, this joke is great.
Should I get this as a gift for someone? Absolutely. We've included an option.
I can show you how you can put Windows 95 on your Mac for free. You like that?
Fine.
This is an interesting project from Felix Riesberg. It's on GitHub. You can download it and run it. I never did get it running on the Mac, but I do have it running on Windows. I think it was just something, maybe a bad download. But it includes Minesweeper, Netscape Navigator, and a whole lot more. I mean, this thing is awesome. It is. Let me run it again. I seem to have. Oh, no, it's working. Here we go. There's Minesweeper. It's just as slow as the original Windows 95 as well. I think there's also some of your favorite games like Doom, Wolfenstein 3D. Should I try? Do you think it would run Wolfenstein? Let's try it.
Do it.
Oh, man, this would be fun if it really works. It is free. I don't know how to tell you how to get it, but it's on GitHub. If you search for Felix Windows 95, there's a Linux version, there's a Windows version, and there's a Mac version. And battery's not included. It's based on Electron, so it would have crashed.
Yeah,
Renee, when you crashed Chrome, pretty wild. It has Doom, Wolfenstein, A10, Tank Killer, and Grand Prix Circuit, along with Minesweeper. You can reset the machine. It supports high DPI devices. There's downloads for Mac, Windows, and Linux. I guess you know GitHub.com/FelixRIE. S-E-B-E-R-G. Hey, I spent about an hour playing Minesweeper yesterday. That's it for our show. But when Harry Potter comes out, I'm abandoning Minesweeper for Harry Potter. Renee Ritchie, Wizards Unite. Literally, that's the name of the show. He is the wizard at imore.com and his Vector podcast. I'm going to listen to. So you talked to Neil Patel, and that's going to be on tomorrow.
It'll be up tomorrow morning, yes, sir.
Can't wait to hear that. That'll be very interesting. Was it only about Elizabeth Warren, or was it other things
as
well?
Okay. No, it was precise. I try to do the show's focus. So yesterday I had MKBHD and Marco Armont talking about what they want to see in the next Mac Pro, and then I quickly sidestepped to Elizabeth Warren.
Very nice. That's awesome. Thank you, Renee, for being here, as always. And you'll be here next week, but I think you're going to be traveling a little bit the week after.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Lori Gill will be filling his shoes. She's the wizard at iMore as well, managing editor there, Appaholic, a rock and roll singer of some repute. And she got her Kickstarter before me.
I know. You don't like me anymore.
I just went and looked at my email, and they've been sending me an email every week since February saying, we need your address. We need your address. We need your address. I guess Kickstarter.
You'd have yours.
I would have had it, but I'll get it now. I filled it all in. Thank you, Lori. Always a thrill to have you on the show.
Thank you.
Andy Iannacco, he's Boston Public Radio, WGBH in Boston most Fridays, and he joins us every Tuesday. Hi, and he's also the host of the Material Podcast on Relay.fm if you want to hear him talk more about Android.
Yep. not much call for that amongst Mac Break viewers. My Twitter feed is equality.
But I'm thinking you'll be talking about the Galaxy S10.
We talked about that last week, but Friday we're doing Boston Public Radio from the Boston Public Library again. So if you want to grab a cup of coffee and a cookie, which you will have to pay for because it is actually a coffee shop that's near next to the studio, come on by around 12:30-ish to 1-ish when I will be talking probably about Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren and me being a little bit skeptical.
Be my guess that'll be the topic. We do Mac Break Weekly Tuesdays, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. And, of course, now we're in summertime here in the U.S. So we're GMT minus 7. That means it'll be, 1800 UTC. You can stop by and watch at twit.tv/live. If you do that, join us in the chat room, irc.twit.tv. And we always have on-demand versions as well. If you want to watch or listen, just go to twit.tv/mbw or subscribe in your favorite podcatcher. And we'll make sure you get a copy the minute it's available automagically. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time. But now it's time to get back to work because break time is over.